Hello and welcome back to the Millennial Ag Podcast, where agriculture is always on tap and no topic is off limits. Thanks for joining us today, your co-hosts, Valene Cawhorn and Catherine Lotsbeach.
Hello, Millennial Ag. Welcome back to this week's episode. I'm excited to announce that this is the second part of the Idaho Cattle Association conversation. Last week, you heard about my conversation at the Summer Roundup with Jared Brackett, Lynn Bachman, Rex Hoagland, and Cody Hendricks. So this week, we have three more exciting guests joining us this week, and we can't wait for you to hear about what's going on at the Idaho Cattle Association and what's going on in the state of Idaho as well. So please tune in and enjoy this week's episode. Our next guest is Mr. Jerry Roten. He is the past president of the Idaho Cattle Association, and now he's living in East Africa. So we're going to discuss a little bit about what's going on at the ICA today, but I would like to see what you're up to in East Africa. So thanks for joining us and start by giving a little background about who Jerry Roten is.
Thank you, Valene. Jerry Roten, I grew up in Jordan Valley, Oregon on the Idaho side. Did that for a lot of years, worked for Farm Credit, Zions Bank, had a cow-calf herd for a number of years. Been on the ICA, been a member for 12, 13 years. Been on the ICA board of directors for the last seven. Last year was my presidency, now past president, and that's been going well. Last year, one of my friends from East Africa in Tanzania offered us a business development job in his agricultural consulting firm, where they were looking for someone to help on their farms manage cattle and spray crops with drones. And I'd flown a little at a private pilot's license and I said, oh, I could do that. And he said, send your stuff over and we'll get started. Talked to my sister and talked to my family kind of about it. They were ready to work on the ranch and take that on. And they had teaching jobs there in the area. So my wife was gung-ho. She's all in. She took her basset hat. And last 7 months, we've been over there. We sprayed over 7,000 acres. We helped manage about 1,000 head of cattle. And it's not South Africa. Everyone keeps asking that. But it's Tanzania. So we're up in the east by the equator. We're at 6,000 feet. It's going really well so far. Had a lot of good luck. And it's been an eye-opener.
What's the climate like in Tanzania?
It's very, you know, it's on the coast. It comes all the way across. Where we're at is about 6,000 feet elevation. The rainy season is about 80 inches from about December to May, and your temperatures there are about 60 to 85 and 90 degrees Fahrenheit. And then the dry season, the winter, is from about June to 1st of December, and that's about 45 to 75, just clear blue skies, but pretty dry. Oh, it's perfect for a guy like me. No freezing, no sweat, and I live pretty well that way.
You get the coast or the equator life of...
You're up high and then you get over there to the coast and it's 100 degrees, 90% humidity and I just bounce.
So what kind of cattle are that down there?
So the cattle we're running is a Baran. It's like a smaller Brahman. The Maasai tribes, the local tribes in the area, they run Zebu and Watusi. But the Baran are a South African breed that we're working with and we're trying to cross them with some of the English breeds. We're trying Fleffy out of Europe, and we're looking at opportunities there, and they're very resilient cattle. We dip them once a week for ticks, but they're very resilient to flies. They look big, but they're pretty hollow. They weigh about 1,000 pounds, 1,100 pounds. If we can cross them with the Fleckvi, we can get them up to about 14-15 pounds. So we're feeling pretty good. That operation we're on has purebred Baran bulls that we sell out into the area. Those take a little bit longer. Instead of a two-year-old bull, these are usually about 4 years old. Wow. So a lot of new things that way, yeah. And I have to compliment the Tanzanian culture. They're very big into their cattle industry. They'll be out there 24/7, fight lines, haul water, whatever it takes for the cattle. And that's pretty neat.
Is water easily available, or are a lot of guys having to haul water?
Within reason, it just depends on the region. Where we're at, there's a lot of rivers, a lot of little lakes, reservoirs. Further north, like the Maasai tribes, the pastoral lands, they'll have to walk their cattle to water, walk into the springs and that type of thing. Or the ladies of the tribe will walk to water and haul water back while the men haul the cattle or walk the cattle to the grass. It's really regional in that concept. Some of the wells we've dug there are anywhere from 100 to 300 feet. And so not bad for the other areas. It's tough. The rainy season's great. When it's in the winter and the dry season, that's when it gets like Thursday. So not bad so far from what I've experienced. Did it come back to the drought here? You're just like, wow, things have changed. Get back home. There's tons of grass, but then you're like, wow, it's dry. Fires already. It's just tough to see.
Yeah. But, and having, what'd you say, 80 inches of rain?
We had 8 inches in 17 hours. And I told my wife, I was like, I don't think our house is high enough and we don't have a boat because the water is running bad. So it was good to see.
That's cool and a great experience. You've got a large herd. What would you say is the average herd size in Tanzania?
The small farmer who has one or two down to the operations, like the big Maasai tribes that are running 400 or 500 head. And it seems like their cultural concept, you know, is to acquire cattle because that's their bank. That's their value. When they need money, they could sell a cow, sell a bull. And that's where their wealth is found and they hold on to it. And so where we're doing is the importance of it is like for our farm we're working with normally is utilizing all the landscape, make sure it has fire protection, rotational grazing, helps keep labor involved, and it keeps the ground being utilized. And so that's kind of the basis there, and we're taking those next steps to ensure the herd stays around and help improve. The Zebu cattle is a very hardy breed. They're just smaller, and if you really cut them out, you're not getting a lot of meat.
What's the life cycle of a cow in Tanzania? You know, are you taking it to market for butcher like we are in the States, or is it a lot longer?
So the farm we're on, where we're going, is we're looking at the opportunity where we're weaning these calves at 5 to 6 months, and then we're putting them on grass up to about 2 years. There's not a lot of feedlot action, if you want to put it that way. Most of it's grass fed in the last 30 days to up that, and then they're put to market. Kind of the common Tanzanian culture there is to hold on to animals for that bank purpose, and they're usually harvesting something 14, 15, 16 years old. That'll immediately be harvested and sold immediately into the community. Every piece is utilized and sent right out. And that's the difference from what we expect here. You know, we hang them, you hang it for 2 weeks, 3 weeks and have it, and you have cold storage available and they just don't have it. They cut the meat right there. It's hanging right in town, good to go to a point. We've learned to acquire the taste through various ways of cooking, but we're hoping to like share some of our knowledge to help gain a little bit more marbling. And there is opportunity there. We've seen tests done with like Zebu cattle. They can finish well. We just need to give them the opportunity.
What resources do you have to finish them? You know, they're like, is there byproducts? Is there corn? Is there?
Yep. So the farms we're on right now, they're growing seed corn in the rainy season and then moving over to malt barley and seed potatoes. So there is corn, there's barley, there's potato options. It's just one of those, they don't have the knowledge base or the facilities to hold on to that byproduct until feeding time. I mean, it's pretty hand to mouth. One of those, like in the case of the seed corn, we were harvesting the male rows and taking them directly to the cattle herd, stocks and all. And those cattle would eat them right there. The yearlings, that's what they were getting because that was our opportunity. We didn't have the equipment, the people to actually turn silage at the time or build those facilities quite yet. And so that's part of pretty unique and seeing there. And the future could work that way. There's a lot of labor available and people are hardworking there. It's very impressive what they can do.
So it sounds like a lot of the processing too is one guy cutting up an animal and distributing it. You don't have your butcher shops or your processing facilities that we've industrialized.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's one of those, you get down to these local villages, it's one guy or it's his family that operates that butcher shop. You know, they're not doing mass amounts of animals because you also have goats and chicken and sheep and cattle. And so it's whatever that day is, that's what they're going to harvest. Some of the guys we work with, they're doing 50 to 60 head a month. Like that's, and they're topping out and they got 4 or 5 employees. I mean, it's one of those, like they're reflecting the market. It's a very large tourism market. I mean, and that's what drives it. And it's a growing middle class. There's about 60 million people in that country the size of Texas. They need meat. They want meat. It's just what's available and what's out there. I've never butchered much other than an elk or something like that. So I'd like to learn to work on that too down the road. We'll see where time takes.
Not a farm of what you got.
What we could do. Yep, absolutely. And try and do it right. Not one of those, just hack our way through it.
Yeah. What's the regional demand? So you've got Tanzania that seems like they're wanting more protein. What are the surrounding countries?
So the north is like Kenya, Uganda, Rwanda. You know, you go directly to the west is Congo. The south, you have Zambia and Mozambique. And I have to give compliments to Zambia. Zambian beef is well ahead of us. They're doing very good They're probably the closest beef, them in South Africa, that I've seen to the American quality. They're getting there. And the demand, I would say, in Tanzania is really internal. Anything exported seems to be going to the Middle East. You know, straight to the ships, which in their big demand in the Middle East. Kenya kind of takes care of themselves, as well as Uganda. I can't speak to the Congo. The Zambia beef, they do very well. Mozambique, I haven't done much research on. And so everything's still in the States, real internal that way.
Well, and what's the power situation, you know, cold storage and so electricity?
Electricity is surprisingly available. They have very big hydro capacity, and they're actually selling power outside of the country. There's just not the infrastructure. No one's building cold storage, whether it's for potatoes or cattle. So that's a we think might be an opportunity down the road, is utilizing that labor, utilizing electricity to put in something like that, which really, it's all over the plans. It just takes time and money.
And marketing. Yeah, like marketing. You're in a whole different country.
Yep. And in a whole different culture and a whole different language. And we want to fit into their customs and do it appropriately and be a part. And that's important.
How has the community accepted you or welcomed you? And how is that transition coming from the States over there been?
9 times out of 10, it's been very, very positive. People are very open and willing, and it's a very receptive culture. I felt there, and it's one of those, my first hard lesson, I would say, was one of these gentlemen that was working for us. He'd lost his father the night before in a tragic accident. Showed up to work bright and early. Hello, Jerry. How are you? Very, very positive. And my boss calls me. He's like, hey, Jerry, let's send this guy home. Hey, what happened? He's here. He's like, oh, it's family. He had a tragic accident last time. We need to get him home. He didn't tell me that. He's like, no, they don't. They're very open, very positive, and they move with their days. That was a hard lesson for me learning. So like, we don't know what these guys are experiencing. And so the one negative, the police, I just don't get along. Speeding tickets here and there. That's more of a personal problem, probably. So I work on that.
What kind of vehicles do they have?
Very older, lots more pickups, a lot of flat-nosed trucks, a lot of Chinese vehicles coming over. Like, my wife and I bought a 1994 Toyota Land Cruiser, all-wheel drive. It's been utilized, it's been used, but it's what was there. It was cheap, and it gets us going. A lot of Land Cruisers, a lot of Toyota, a lot of Zuzu, but nothing big. Like, if you get over, like, a Toyota Tacoma size, you're going to a truck. There's no Dodge 2500. It's nothing that size. That's really in the area. And I would say there's a kind of a concept, don't want to be in that area. Just it wouldn't be economical at this point. To what board does it? Yeah. So,
how do they move and transport cattle around since they don't have a lot of, you know, trucks and trailers?
And it's super fun. Either they walk them or they have these, the two options is a box nose truck that has a box on it, and they just stuff as many cattle as they can. And usually it's about 18 to 20. It's about a 20-foot trailer. Or they get an open air trailer if they have the homes like Watusis, and those are about 30 feet. And they usually have a guy or two in the back making sure they don't do anything foolish. And those guys ride back there the whole way, whether it's 10 hours, 2 hours. It's, yeah. And that was another shock. I was like, we loaded these cattle and like, okay, what do you do? Oh, we get this guy back here. He'll watch it. You mean watch it? So they don't jump out. They don't do anything. Oh, okay, cool. Because it's open. It's only about 6 foot high. You know, they could jump or whatever. We did lose one animal, and that's, they just forgot to latch it. It jumped down, jumped off the road. It was a tough deal. But yeah, not like the handling we have here, so it's that part's good.
And no horses?
No horses. Everything's afoot. Everything's calf tables, but those guys will stay with them. Cattle, rain or shine, night or day, hyenas, lions, they're with their animals. That's been very neat to see.
So, speaking of hyenas and lions, so are those their wolves and grizzly bears down there?
There's no wolves and grizzly bears, but we've had 3 animals die from cobra bites. That's been impressive because they're very quick reacting. Hyenas haven't killed anything that I've been aware of, but they're deadly to our pivots. They chew up the sprinklers, and they follow the night guards around quite closely. The lions are about an hour from us. I haven't seen any of those yet. Cape buffalo are pretty interesting. They're around. They're nearby. No known issues with disease or anything like that I've seen so far, but there's a lot of new things to look at. But yeah, we've been very blessed, I think, with not learning the wild dogs or the lions. Yeah, jaguars, leopards, that whole gang.
Your safari, pretty much.
Yeah, pure safari. And we're about an hour away, hour and a half away from the Waha National Park. And that's, you know, one of the prettiest parks in the world. very little traveling there because it's so inland. And so there's a lot of wildlife there, elephants, and big five are supposedly there. It's really cool to be out there on that fringe.
What do you do to protect against the snakes, or is there anything you can do?
There isn't much we do, to be honest. Keep your lawn cut short. You kind of watch where you're walking. You kind of stay on top of stuff. And it's kind of like a natural thing like we had here, like with rattlesnakes. Everyone kind of gives each other space, kind of live and let live for the most part. A lot of employees, everyone hates snakes. It's an unwritten thing. They're very aggressive in keeping snakes away from the area. From that place. Yeah.
How big is a cobra?
From what they tell me, they get up to 6 to 10 feet. Black mambas are there. We actually slept one. Our buddy didn't tell us this. Like, oh, we just cleared a black mamba nest out of that bed just the other day. The one you stayed in last night. I was like, he could have told me that. Come on, man. Oh, you ain't coming back. Don't worry. I'm like, yeah, that's just. He knows I'm Jeff. They're afraid of snakes too, outside of all that. So, yeah.
I would struggle with that because, yeah, I can't even hear a rattlesnake without just losing my. Just
having that hair go right up. Yeah. And the trouble, well, the worry we have is the cobras. Is the cobras where we're at, they're the most spitting ones. So they'll spit first. And they got a pretty, I understand, pretty good day. And about 6 to 10 feet, they can reach too if they're spitting and they'll go right for your eyes. So you got to go watch your dogs, watch yourself, kind of like. Be ready for them because they'll come up first and then you gotta get back because apparently they can be time. I'm trying to make sure I don't have that experience, but
don't get spit on.
Don't get spit on, but yeah. They make sure you're wearing sunglasses and that's everyone's like, you know, have glasses on, just part of the game.
Wow.
Yeah, no one really teaches you that till you get there.
We don't have similar things, but you have your cultural things that you learned here just by growing up in it too, that you have to adapt and that's figure it.
Part of.
Are you getting any pressure from the conflicts in the Middle East right now?
For what it's not much at all. It's one of those of there's always going to be conflict. There's always radical groups. You know, we know where the radical groups are in areas around us. It's just a safe way to just stay out of those areas. And it makes it where we've had no issues, no violence, no problems. It's a very safe country for what we've experienced. And we've been there for the last 10 years. We've been there 10 different times. We never had an issue.
Well, thanks, Jerry, for jumping on and talking about your experience in Africa. I mean, we could go down markets. We could go down a couple of different rabbit holes. But is there anything else you want to leave listeners with or, you know, inspire people to try something they never thought they'd do?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that's my kicker. You know, you get one shot at life, you know, be a part of something. Don't be afraid. And I think that's part of the strength of the ICA. ICA is willing to step up and it's giving me the courage to step up and go try something new and, you know, stand up for what you dream of and want to do. And that's the importance of all things. And that's why I would share with anyone, like, you got one life to live, at least, you know, think it through and make a jump because it's going to be fun. At least you got something to fall back on. And if you don't, just try something new again.
And you have a good story to tell at the end of the day.
Yeah, that's it. Have a great story. That's a good story. That's what I live for. And that's about the ICA. That's the strength of the ICA. There's always a good story to tell all of our members. And I would always ask anyone to try, talk to a member and join the cause, be a part.
And have your voice heard because we have a variety of different segments in the state of Idaho, operations, that sort of thing. And everybody needs to be represented and have an opinion. And my outlook's different than your outlook sometimes and different than North Idaho's outlook.
North Idaho, an experienced citizen and understand it. It's one of those needs. It's all together because if we're not at the table, we're definitely going to be on the table. So yeah, I firmly believe in it.
Awesome. Well, thanks again, Jerry, for joining us.
Thank you.
Our next guest is Mr. Spencer Black, and he is president of the Idaho Cattle Association. So, Spencer, thank you so much for taking time to jump on and maybe to get us started, give a little bit of background about who you are, where you're from, and what your operation's up to these days.
My pleasure to be on here today. Grew up in Burley, Idaho on a Finnish yard. My dad still operates that. We have a cow-calf operation in Alamo, which is where I reside. I manage that. And there's three individuals in our partnership, one being my cousin, and he has a full-time job. And then my dad runs the feedlot, and I run the ranch.
So you keep it pretty segregated, so you each have your roles and responsibilities to keep out of each other's way on a day-to-day basis.
We allow everybody to have their opinion too. So my dad is the majority shareholder. I would be next, and then my cousin, but everybody has an equal say. We've always been able to get along. Even if we do disagree, people feel heard. It works really well.
Well, and I think that's an art that has been lost, is agreeing to disagree and coming back and saying, okay, we don't see eye to eye on this, but what's the solution here? Where can we go? And I think that ties right into a lot of what the Idaho Cattle Association is doing and some of the political work you all are faced with nowadays as well.
Well, that's a hard thing to navigate because every part of the state is so unique to the cattle industry, but in the end, we're still one entity. We're still trying to represent cattle as a whole in the state and protect the way we make a living.
It's ever changing. Like, we've got an administration that's volatile. We've come off of a Democratic, now we're Republican. It seems to be more favorable. It changes. Idaho's politics are interesting right now. Rangeland's up for debate too. You know, like it's...
It never ends. It never ends. It's always changing. The perception of what we do on the range and how we raise our cattle, it can change from area to area. So,
well, and it was interesting today, and I'm probably going to talk about this panel forever, because having four females come on and discuss their consumers in the state of Idaho who appear to be educated and natives. And I take for granted what our consumers know about the beef industry, and they can't with our cows. Like she talked about driving right through. Oh, they look happy. Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah. And that's one thing that we've complained about over the years is ever since COVID, people are getting outside and the recreationists, and yes, they can be a pain. One thing I took away from that today is they don't necessarily rely on social media for their information. And so a lot of times when I'm on my allotment and there's recreationists, if they'll stop and visit with me, I have no problem talking about the operation, what we do, what the benefits to having us up there is. And that to me is where it starts, is people are not going to know about our industry unless we're willing to talk to them about it.
And when they can put a face to and a person to what's actually going on, it's a lot harder to hate somebody you've known. And it's being courteous too. Like Johnny saw a lady in her pink outfit and her little fluffy dog running through the desert, and he was turning bulls out. He's like, I drove past her a ways to get him out of her way, so I didn't scare her, you know, but it's taking that extra time to talk to him and be courteous to him.
Well, and a lot of times we complain about gates not being shut, and these people, they're getting outside, not for their first time, but for their, maybe they didn't grow up camping and now they've decided that they're going to start camping and they don't know what a cheat bar is on a gate. I've seen people struggling with it. So take the time and show them. It's not their fault that they did. We grew up with it as common knowledge, how to use a cheat bar. They don't. And so we can't get mad at them because they don't know how to do this.
And so how do we reach them? Because social media, they're not trusting social media nearly like they used to. And so we can reach some of them that we come across, but we can't be out there integrating with every single person that comes through.
It's a combination of things. We can't just rely on one source. We got to be willing to talk about it. We got to be willing to use these social media outlets. But no, we're not going to reach everybody. And so I don't have the answer to that. But one thing that I've done is more of a grassroots deal. And naturally, I'm an
extrovert.
Yeah, I'm an extrovert. If there's somebody in a room, I'm going to talk to it. And so that's when we're traveling and we're going to all these different events, sit next to somebody on the plane, the cowboy hat is a great way to strike up the conversation. And so I just start talking about what we do, how I make a living. That's the approach that I've taken. I did want to do the social media, but it's just like anything. It takes so much time and I don't have the patience for it.
Yeah. In order to get the followers, you have to be in the algorithms and you have to post all the time and you have to be clickbaity enough.
All the time. You have to do it all the time. And sometimes you have to have things that the industry doesn't necessarily like, but it gets you the views. And so now all of a sudden you've got the industry mad at you. You have the general population mad at you, but you got the views. And so that is a hard thing to navigate emotionally, is being not liked by both sides.
You want to be authentic, so you want to show what's actually going on, but do you want to show too much or too little or your family or, you know,
It's just like we can sit here and we can talk about how, yeah, I take care of my animals. That's how it goes. But once in a while, you get one in the feedlot and it's fevered up and it goes and it lays in the puddle. So you do your due diligence. You go out there and you put straw for it. You bring it over and you put it on the straw. And then you come back out 2 hours later and it's wallowed back to the pond. Yeah, that's a side that we don't want to show, but it is a reality.
you care enough to try, and animals are still animals.
They're still animals.
What are some things, as president of the Idaho Cattle Association, you've worked on in the last 6-8 months that you've been president and that you want to share with others?
The one thing that has really been a sweet success for me, because I was feeder council chair when we went down this road, is when we started talking about the brand inspection fees and how to keep them solvent and do we value them in the state of Idaho. And there were some people that were not interested in a fee increase. We did put rules on the brand department, things that we wanted them to meet. We did not want to be the ones going to the industry and ask. We wanted them to come to us and do the ask. And not that we didn't help facilitate that. That has been almost a 3-year process from start to finish. And they did everything that we asked. We had a little bit of compromise on things, but to be able to go and testify in the committee meetings in the Senate and the House and see that pass, get them some flexibility to function as a board, allow them to make changes as far as cattle numbers are up and the brand fee can come down, they can make that decision. Or if they're needed to buy trucks and the price changes and to keep them solvent, they need to bring it up, they can do that. 3 years to see that go across the finish line. That was a very sweet victory for me this year and for the association.
I mean, it shows you that these processes aren't clean. They're messy and it takes a lot of hard conversation that takes the cattle association, but it took the dairy association, the wool growers, the horse, you know, it took
LMA, Farm Bureau. We had anybody that was in the livestock, we had to involve them, because for an ask like that, everybody had to be on the same page. Even when we did come to that decision and we went for the ask, if one entity would have backed out, it would not have gotten across the finish.
And with the current political climate in Idaho too, it was, you could argue behind closed doors on what the fees went to and how it was all structured, but when you guys walked out of the room, it was a united front that this is what we needed and this is what we had. You made that decision together prior to
going and having the ask. And if anybody would have backed out, they would have had to answer to the rest of us as to why they decided to back out.
There was, at least when we started in November and January with some of these conversations, there was some concern that there'd be pushback from the legislature on this. And it seemed like there was minimum to none pushback. You had a few.
We had people that pushed back. One thing that stood out to me since I've been involved in been on the board and involved with ICA is at one time we had 9 people that had been involved in the ICA that were legislators at the state level. And I don't know what the exact number is now, but it's a third of what it used to be. And every year, or every time we have an election, we lose more and more people from agriculture that are representing us there. And yet we do have people that claim to know agriculture, yet they don't, that are trying to represent us. And that is where we get a lot. The whole thing about the brand fee is it's a fee, and it was a fee increase, but it was argued that it was a tax. It's not a tax. It's how we have ownership to our cattle.
It's a very important piece of our industry here in the state of Idaho. I know when I went on my YCC trip and people were saying, oh, we don't have a brand department. We have to go around collecting checkoff this way and we can't confirm ownership and stuff. And it made me appreciate having a brand department and having brand inspections.
And in some states, I get why they don't do it. Here in the West, we run on public ground. One of the allotments I'm on, there's 12 different permittees up there. How are we going to keep them separate? We have to have the brand. Because I've got cows that I can put a tag in every year, and 3 days later, her tag is gone.
And they're all along a barbed wire fence where they stick their heads first.
Exactly. So that was one thing that was where I've seen the importance of it. How I even got involved in ICA is we had a project show up on one of my allotments that we didn't quite know how to handle. And so we called one of our local associations, and they put us in touch with the ICA, and they responded. They showed up and responded. That to me was invaluable. So then that November, when they were looking for a board member, they came and asked me, and the rest is history. Here I am now.
It's hard to say no when you see the value and you've experienced personally what their services have provided back to you and your operation.
Yes.
And we're, like you mentioned, there's less cattlemen and farmers in the state house than there ever has been. And it goes beyond just political work too. You got, what other work are you guys involved with outside of tracking bills?
Policy is one thing that I've noticed every year we've got to evolve, like how we operate and those sort of things, because there's something new that comes up all the time. And a lot of times we can't take a stance on it because we don't have policy. Water was one of those things that we've always stayed out of the fight on, and we still stay out of the fight, but we were starting to get questions as to what our policy is. Our policy does support the Idaho Constitution, but at least now when other commodity groups ask us, we can say what our stance is. And that's a hard one to get too involved in either, because we represent the whole state. What goes on in Eastern Idaho is different from what goes on in the Magic Valley, and we don't need that dividing our membership.
And that's why you have a policy book.
We have a policy book.
Members over the years have created the policy book and keep updating it. And so when you as a president get a call, it's not Spencer Black making the decision, or it's the Idaho Cattle Association through Spencer saying, this is what our policy is and this is our stance.
And I always make it a point when I am talking to individuals that, okay, this is our policy and this will be our stance, but I can take off my ICA hat and I make sure to tell them that and give them my personal opinion, but I am not speaking on behalf of ICA.
Yeah, every individual has that right too.
Yes.
Pulling out the policy book or saying, Valene believes that this is how this water issue should be resolved.
Well, that's what I always like to pose to people that are not members and they call and ask me questions. I'll say, first off, I don't know that there's anything I can do for you because you're not a member. But if you want to become a member, you will see how much I care.
I've seen over the years how much work the president does, the staff does, the executive committee, the board puts into it. So I can stay home and calve cows out in February. I don't have to be at the state house. Same with NCBA, like having Tanner Beamer and Ethan Lane and everybody back there fighting that fight. So I don't have to go to DC. I don't have to put the boxing gloves on and figure out what's going on. Like, I review the policy and trust that they're going to follow the policy.
That's been a flip for me too, because I used to see some of these people serve on boards and I would think, oh, they're not at home paying attention to things. But now that I've been involved, not everybody likes doing it. And if somebody likes to do it and we like their thought process and how they go about it, we need to support those individuals. I don't know that I'm lucky, but I will say I'm lucky enough that I do enjoy the policy side of things. And I do like going out meeting people and hearing their problems and seeing what we can do. And we need that, because every day there is something that could affect our livelihood.
And it changes overnight. I mean, the permit grazing and windmills coming in, like, and then you switch administration and then we switch back. Like, you've got to be on your toes. I mean, we rank policy based on that so that we can respond to industry threats.
Yes,
as a whole.
If we rank it as a number one, it is something that we're going to push. If it's number two, we're going to monitor it. We're going to have a stance on it. If it gets down into the three or four range, we're just monitoring it. We don't necessarily have a stance. But at any moment, if any of these things decide to go, we can bump them up to a number one as the session goes on.
It's a very fluid
deal.
Yeah. Well, you're about, what, halfway through your presidency?
I believe I'm a little over half, because I'll be over with in November.
What's left of your presidency and what are you hoping to accomplish in the next 3-4 months of the rest of your term?
That's a tough one. I would like to see membership continue to grow. I would like to see the trust in the ICA. We've done an excellent job of taking our appointees to the brand board, to the beef council, PLC. We've taken these nominations. We don't take them lightly, is what I'm trying to say. There's a lot of thought process that goes into these individuals. I want to keep seeing the membership grow. I want to keep seeing our voice get bigger. We have been talking a lot about the Western Martingale and other states showing a lot of interest in it. That has been an avenue for Idaho now to be in District 5. We have the potential to be the voice of the West. In years past, we haven't been there, but because of people that came before me that value ICA, we have turned that around. Cameron, I've noticed with Cameron that where he's been here for 8 years, a lot of the other states are starting to look for him for advice. And they start to come to us when they get an idea. They want to know what our stance is going to be on it before we go. And I would like to see that momentum continue.
We have more cows than we have people in the state of Idaho. So keeping that statistic the same too and continuing to have a voice, because it's beef industry, the cattle industry are near and dear to my heart. And I know they are to everybody that's been at convention and beyond.
Well, it doesn't matter if you grew up in it and you didn't want to go back. There's still something about the beef industry that you can't let it go. And even if you're a first generation rancher, I feel bad for them sometimes because they get picked on with their social media and they don't know what they're doing. But I love it because they ask the questions that sometimes we're supposed to know just because we grew up in it. And I'm glad that they ask it because I've forgotten about it. And so it's, and they're interested and they're passionate about it and they're wanting to learn, they're wanting to try new things. I want them to feel like they can be a part of the association and contribute because that's what's going to keep us going is new people being interested. And it's one of the last frontiers that somebody gets a little extra money, they can buy a cow and they can start trying to grow.
Those questions that somebody that has a fresh set of eyes, it's stuff that we should know, but maybe we don't know, or we haven't been humble enough to go, oh, I didn't realize that when a cow does this, this means, you know, or what have you, or this is when you get luteolized, or this is when you give oxytocin, like walking through some of that stuff that I should know about, but I didn't care about when I was 12.
We don't care about it, and we've just done it because that's the way we've always done it, but they want to know why. And so I appreciate that people want to get it.
Yeah. No, I'm encouraging people. We're better together than we are divided.
That is correct.
Well, thank you, Spencer, for jumping on the podcast. Is there anything else you want to leave listeners with and plug membership, or can they find ICA and become members? IdahoCattle.org.
My phone number's in the line rider. I tell people this all the time because I do have a sales background. I try and make myself available. I believe in the association. We are membership driven. That has a lot of weight when we go back to Boise and we help do these policy decisions. But if anybody needs help talking to somebody, just give me a call. My phone's on. It is a sales pitch, but it's a passionate sales pitch that I believe in.
And it's based in experience and knowledge. It's sales, but it's honest experience. It's not used car sales.
Yes, and I always tell them, I've said it numerous times, we're membership driven. I would like to keep that going because it speaks volumes.
It really does. Well, thanks again, Spencer, and thank you for your service as well to the ICA.
Thank you, Valley.
Hi, I'm Tom Heron, founder of Ag Professionals. Agriculture is always innovating and evolving, and at Ag Professionals, we provide the expertise to help you stay ahead. From land use planning and environmental compliance, permitting to real estate, civil and environmental engineering, and land surveying, we offer one-stop solutions you need to grow and succeed. We're proud to support the Millennial Ag Podcast because we believe in the future of agriculture. Let's build that future together. Visit our website, agpros.com, to learn how we can help your operation thrive.
So our next guest is Ms. Kelsey Peterson. And Kelsey, thank you so much for joining us. Do you want to give listeners a little bit of background about yourself and your operations?
Yeah, for sure. So I'm Kelsey Peterson. My husband, Joe, and I, we ranch in Melba in the Owyhee County side. We run a pretty small cow-calf operation, and primarily we sell direct to consumer. So it's pretty much our whole deal.
So with the direct to consumer, have you noticed a big increase since COVID, or what sparked that market for you guys to pursue?
Yeah. So our herd's pretty small and we just kind of needed somewhere to go with our beef. And we started kind of right around COVID. So it picked up pretty fast. Actually, a couple of years ago, I quit my town job. So I was the agriculture education teacher and FFA advisor. And our beef really started to be kind of a full-time job of itself. So got to come home and focus on that and raise our little girls. And yeah.
How fun. And what better way to raise kids than,
right,
than with the cows and on the land. When we got started, you handed me this cow-calf coloring book.
Yeah.
Give me a little bit of a history on why you created this coloring and activity book.
Yeah. So mainly because of our oldest daughter, Isla. She is obsessed with cows. And so she's our second generation of our operation, and she has some favorites in our herd. So I Googled some coloring pages, and to be honest, there's really not a whole lot out there. There is some stuff, but it seems to be kind of limited on what illustrations you can find before you start to find cows with horns and Highland cows and a lot of dairy cows. And she really wants her beef cow. So I started to do some coloring pages just for her of a couple of her favorite cows. And then it kind of turned into this idea of how could I share my love of ranching and beef cattle and tie in my education background to create something that's educational, but also engaging, that's pretty well representative of our industry. So
that is so fun. So did you sketch these or how did you create the coloring pages?
Yeah. So all the pictures in our book are of our cows, which makes it a little more special. But yeah, I just used an app and turned them into coloring pages. And then we've gone through quite a few editing processes, but I just wanted to, I don't really know why I started with cow calf, but it seems what maybe people are most familiar with. And then it just follows our herd a little bit. We're probably not the norm of Idaho, but I try to make some things more general to represent Idaho cattle as a whole. But it does start with like the calf being born, and we have to tag it and we have to band it and stuff like that. And then it goes into branding. So there's a spot where they can make their own brand, and it has some examples of some close friends of ours mm-hmm. that we asked them if they want to be in with us on this deal. And then it goes into the weaning process, and then it ends with our calves going out to summer pasture. And our calves kind of take a long trip to get to summer pasture, but that way we included some fun activities so that kids know beef, the beef story, but also a little bit of Idaho too. I'm actually working on a prequel and a sequel just because our cow-calf book, it's kind of, I don't know, like mid-elementary to maybe middle school-ish age kids, just with the math that we put in there for like drawing vaccines and stuff like that. But the prequel is, I think we're pretty set on the name Ranch Basics. So it'll be more like a cow versus a heifer and a bull and a steer and what those things look like, and maybe some matching and maybe like counting and stuff like that. And then the sequel, it's going to pick up right where this book leaves off. So we'll bring our calves home, and our calves kind of have three ways that they could go. And I touched on it a little, but if they're going to go to the finishing pen, or we're going to keep them as replacement heifers, or we have a couple of kids that we sell some show steers to, but we're primarily going to focus on the finishing part. So bringing the calves home, getting them onto their grain-based diet, what that looks like, and then grass versus grain finished, and kind of all those trendy terms. And then it will go into the processing, maybe touch on rashes just a little. I know like rations and math probably aren't every grandkid's favorite, but it's important. But yeah, like focusing on that processing of the beef and our primal cuts and our retail cuts. And then the end of that book will be us delivering it to our customer and them having dinner.
I love it. I love how you're painting a picture too of the cattle right. industry through pictures, right? Like for us, it's common sense, right? Yes. Because we live it day to day and we understand what a heifer is. We know what a bull is. We know how things get from pasture to plate. But not everybody knows. And the best way to start is when they're young.
Yeah, totally.
How do you get this into the hands of other people? Where's your, you know, market at, and how do you get it to our consumer?
So we just got them a couple weeks ago. So I put them up on our website, and our email list subscribers get it. But we go to a few little markets here and there. But our main goal with coming to ICA this week was to kind of more network our book, to get it out there. So spoke to the cattlewomen to get some of their ideas. Spoke with Miranda Small this week to get it to a couple of different places, like maybe Farm Bureau and Idaho Ag in the Classroom. And yeah, just really get it out there.
Yeah. Noelle, and I think even if it can follow your product to farmers markets or where you guys are marketing your beef too, it helps paint that picture. And I love all your details too. It's so like the little calves and the girls playing with the calves. It's just, it's really heartwarming. And I love that you took time to create this and bring it to fruition. What was the process to get it, you know, developed, edited, and published?
It's kind of a lengthy process. I didn't realize how much it took to create and publish a book until we were like knee deep in it. And then you can't go back. So, but yeah, I just started going through all my pictures and kind of ordering them in a way that flows, and then designing each page. I think we've edited it probably like 3 or 4 times now. Originally, I had my dad, my folks still live in Salmon. So my dad owns the newspaper there and they do a little bit of publishing. They used to do a lot when I was a kid. I remember lots of late nights making a lot of books for people and fair books and stuff like that. But so he kind of got me started. And then I talked to Morgan, the Idaho Cattle Association, and she was like, this is going to be a big deal. So maybe we need to talk to your dad about how fast we can get these pushed out. And I was like, hey, Dad, like, what do you think? And he's like, you can come up and help us work on. I'm like, oh, man. And it's probably about a 6-hour drive for us. So then I reached out to Amanda Radke, and she publishes a lot of books. Mm-hmm. So she suggested Amazon, and it was pretty user-friendly-ish. We went through a couple rounds through Amazon, and then here it is. So it's taken us about 1.5 years from start to finish.
Well, and I'm sure it's like anything, like the first time's the biggest learning curve, right?
Oh, yeah.
Now you have your process in place and your process can refine, but now you get to focus your time and energy on the content creation and the development of it and just plug it into your system that you've created.
Yeah. Our finishing book, I have it all sketched out just on pencil and paper. So I think I'm quite a few pages on that. Just got to get some pictures around done, but it does seem like it is going quite a bit faster.
That's
awesome. Time.
And do your girls jump in and help and provide feedback on what they enjoy coloring? And
yeah, our oldest daughter, she will be 4. So she's just starting to, she'll go to preschool this fall, which is kind of weird, but, and our youngest daughter's 2, will be 2. But yeah, she kind of helps drive what, like the activities and the things that she likes, that if she likes them, then we can make it relatable to other kids and they can learn without knowing that they're learning.
Playing and using their sensories to learn,
right?
Too.
Yeah.
What got you started in education? Why kids? Where does your passion stem from with education?
So I was in FFA. I don't know, I'm probably a generation removed from production agriculture. So my ag teacher. So then I went to college because I really loved FFA, and I thought for sure that that was going to be like my passion, was FFA and teaching, and it is teaching, but high school is hard. But yeah, I really like the ag literacy part of it. Even with our local chapter, I would always try to push our officer team to the ag literacy week is really important, and getting to the elementary school, because elementary school kids love when the big kids come. But mainly just the amount of driving that we do and how many podcasts we listen to, and everybody says that you always got to share your story and social media is whatever.
It's a love-hate relationship.
Yeah,
for sure.
Likes you that day, it'll push it out to a ton of people. If it doesn't like it, then it's gonna not. And I mean it's something that I really like, tangible things that you get your hand on, that I don't know. Yeah, just it's really important for just the story to be out there and the accurate information to be out there, because just living in Melba and that area, there's a lot of consumers that they're like 30 minutes from agriculture and they have no idea.
Well, and were you here yesterday? There was the 4 ladies that sat on a panel that were from Idaho, but yeah, they asked them beef questions and they bought beef, which is our goal, but they were really removed from how the cow got to their plate.
Right. Yeah. And my husband is in the feedlot side of it. He's a general manager of a feedlot. And just the amount of people that have no idea how much byproduct we feed cattle and how efficient they are. And I don't know, just how cool cows are.
Yes, they are. And they're they're sustainable creatures too. Like they uptake range grass that nobody else is going to eat and it's just going to burn. And then we can, you know, recycle the potato away. We can recycle the potato holes. We can put it all to fantastic use by these incredible animals that God's blessed us with.
Right. Yeah, no, I'm kidding.
Well, if you look in your crystal ball, where do you want your coloring book to reach? Who's your target audience?
Yeah. So I don't know. This next year, I think it's going to be a little crazy, but for sure, I just want to get to reach parents with young kids. I try to make them so that the ranch kid can pick it up and they're super engaged with it and put some things in there that they do all the time. And I know a lot of ranch kids sometimes hate school. So trying to get that. But then I also wanted to make it like anybody could pick it up and learn from it. So yeah, definitely we're kind of sticking with youth and working with some ag teachers on maybe just creating a coloring book just for primal and retail cuts of beef to help with the meats contest in FFA, maybe some vet science stuff, some career stuff. Jasa at College of Southern Idaho, she's got quite a list of tools that are in the industry that maybe a lot of kids, depending on where they're at or that they're like first generation, you know, that they have no idea what some of the stuff is. So just creating things that teachers can use that kids are interested in to get the story out there.
Yeah. No, well, that's great. Well, before we wrap up, and I can link your book in our show notes, where can people find the book and where can they find your website?
Yeah. Yeah. So we're on Facebook and Instagram. It's just Peterson Cattle Company, LLC. And then we have a Square website. So it's petersonbeef.square.site.
Perfect. Well, I'll link those in the show notes. And then anything else you want to leave listeners with before you sign off? Words of wisdom or something you had known 3 years ago?
I don't know. We always hear that, right? Like you have to tell your story. And I hear a lot that like your education starts at home. So just find something that you're interested in, that your kids are interested in, and then just do it. Even if it's scary.
Jump both feet in and take a risk.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah.
Perfect. Well, thank you again for joining us. And yeah, I'm really excited for what you've got going and really proud of the work you've done, because this is not something that's in my wheelhouse. And so it's cool to see, you take this and run with it, because this is much needed. So thank you so much for that.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you for tuning into this week's episode of the Millennial Ag Podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it with your friends and like, subscribe, and review to our podcast. You can also find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, or email us at talktous@millennialag.com. Until next week, we are Millennial Ag.